Blog Talk Radio.
Like tempered steel, glowing red, the bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development.
Dex, are you there?
That I am. How is everybody this evening? Hopefully all is well out there. Here we are for another edition of Double Helix. Faziana, I hear you there. How are you?
I'm all right, other than the intro stopped halfway through. But, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's how it kind of sometimes has to happen. I think a lot of stuff stopped today. Here we are in a time of war, going to celebrate some poetry, prayers to everybody around the world that is dealing with some major suffering. You know, it's once we get done with COVID, all of a sudden here we are right on to another, or not done with COVID, but once COVID starts to slow down, here we are right on another major conflict. So, but anyway, here we are. We might as well let all of these things, leave all these things at the door and have some fun here this evening for some great poetry. Faziana, why don't you kick it off and why don't you lead in and let us know about this week's contest.
All right. So this contest is called Self-Portrait. And basically many visual artists do paintings of themselves at some point in their career. So Pam Ray, who's another host on LMP, actually suggested to me that why don't we do one where people do a poetic self-portrait and write about who they are for us to discover more about them. So I did post some examples of the painters like Van Gogh and Joseph de Creux and Picasso, and just kind of show how they show their personality. I love Joseph de Creux's self-portraits. He does a whole bunch of them, and he always makes like hilarious faces, and you can just see that he would be a funny guy. Van Gogh looks pretty serious, which seems in keeping with everything I know about him. And I look forward to finding out what kind of self-portraits our writers gave us.
Awesome. What a great contest. And great. And thank you, Pam, for the suggestion. Because, I'm looking forward to this quite a bit. Did you get into did the Van Gogh experience or whatever make it up to Canada?
You know, it did, but I didn't get to go. It was in Vancouver, which is about a five-hour drive for me, and I haven't been up for traveling lately. With COVID and stuff, it's been difficult, and then there was, like, floods, and it was too hard to get there. But I would love to see it, so I'm hoping it comes back again now that things are more open.
Yeah, it was pretty cool to go see. I got to see it here in Minneapolis, but... Anyway, looks like we got a poem up. We got a plenty of good ones here to get through here this evening. So how do you want to start this?
Why don't you read the one by Peter Solway?
Hey, awesome. This is called Double Album. Beat Bob at the game. Cover of a dozen paintings. Self-portraits, every one. Humming a sad Rembrandt of when young. Tune of a weeping Cupid. Next track, a love gone wrong. Vincent on board. Munch then bacon. Avatars of surrealism. Art student in wool skin. Pig in mud. Then Bonnard of in south of France. With sun, muscles of construction. Blue mountains of... Kegel. Picasso on the flip side, eyes wide, Dolly, period done, Beatles Revolution 9, second record, art instructor waving conceptual baton, more pink trombone, blast of vermilion, Frank Sinatra having sex with my mother, getting risque on Talis. Klaus, self-portrait with paid check, big stick, lavre hanging for fertile students, Whittley to resuscitate, Blake to resurrect, abstract expressionalism, Nietzsche to caution, an empty Warhol condemn, retire, With good cook, lots of pot, and art to look at, television comprehend, disco decoration, that devil Beethoven, death a portrait in black, like Rothko drowning, too much drinking, pills of excitable fans, happy to model with lights on, hum a country tune. Pro with ants, Arthur with bride, Albert with Tucker, starving to death, orbits bereft, out of whack, out of luck, useless universe, needle stuck. Last track, Brett, fat explorer from Oak Flats, keen for or Matisse's comfort, oh, to be a boy again, shoot a slingshot, barnacle gun, rub his uncle's sword, war one. And visage, public fountains of bronze. For me, battleships and Peter Pan, favorite seekers songs. Judith Dunham, once again a teenage time. Joan Baez of Melbourne, beyond erections, hanging for the promised land. Reuniting like a discarded schizophrenic. The band. Adam and the Argonauts, just a sketch of former selves, old as Bosch, fish and by example, skull of forensics, shark of Hish, Margaret of Beach, and a lifted Venus, walks the little dogs, the stones out of reach, late nights, last request, the blues up to evaporate, God to shine a torch forever in eternal space, vacuum and gravity dictate, here on in, to be or not to be, or not no sin, a love song dedicated for Albert and the Einsteins, two sweet virginal equations everywhere listening, self-portrait in the alley out back, old Keith told the smoking rules, past the gate, me pop star mate, sensible Margaret at home with pipe and silence, Negula on TV, Negala on TV, on television, more than a double vision, pretty in London, always one for the girls, lad with bicycle and bell, oblivion's future, install, end poem. Install. Oblivion's future, install, end poem.
That was a lot of tricky names. You did really well.
Yeah, I butchered some of them. But anyway, I thought it was a great write. Faziano, why don't we start with you with comments?
So many references in this. I think I got about half of them. There's a lot of names I didn't know. And I feel like you could spend a long time just keeping track of all the things that he references and connecting them. So he's talking about their self-portraits, but I know from his other poems and ANs that he was an art teacher. So he's talking about the art student and the art teacher. Being the art teacher is his second record. So I think he's writing it like it's a music career at the same time as writing it about the chapters of his life. Each record is a side, is a section of his life. When he's young and a student, when he's a teacher, when he's potentially retired, all the different stages and the different art and music and experiences that shaped who he was at those different stages. So I think this is a really interesting way of telling us about himself, telling us about his influences, and using the cultural connections of art to paint who he is. One part I kind of wondered if it was a double meaning. Out of whack, out of luck, useless universe, needle stuck. So I thought of it as needle, like the record player needle, but I also kind of wondered if maybe it was a drug needle, that it worked in multiple ways. Because it's also a little bit trippy. Really interesting read. There's so much to it. I feel like I need to dissect it a few times and make all of the connections. What did you think, Dex?
Great, great comment. And absolutely, it would take a couple of reads and to really kind of put this all in perspective. Yeah, like you said, fantastic use of references and just a unbelievably imaginative mind. And I think you're right. I think that the double album, I also think that the picture used is very telling of this right as well. The first one looks kind of like a party club scene, disco light and things like that. The next one is an old man around, you know, a table kind of, you know, and like I said, I think that that's kind of the evolution of time. You know, as we age and yeah, he just did a fantastic write. And, he, you know, also, it seems like in each stanza, it almost goes through, its own evolution in itself. It's almost a middle, you know, there's that first line, there's a middle, and then almost that third line is almost, you know, it fits really well, the three part into what he's talking about displaying, more so than just like, here's a stanza, here's a stanza, here's a stanza. It's almost like each individual stanza could be the evolution as well. So anyway, I just thought that this was a fantastic write, very well done by Peter.
I'd like to welcome to the show Pam Ray. Hello, Pam.
Hi, Ephesiana. Hi, Dexter. Good to hear you both.
Hey, Pam. Glad you could make it. Thank you for the idea.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was the funniest thing because in real life, Ephesiana and I never talk on the phone. But I was having this dream, and in the dream I was talking to Ephesiana on the phone. I don't remember what, but I do remember that right in the middle of the conversation I said, hey, you know what you and Dexter should do? You should have a show with the theme of self-portraits. And the way Ephesiana actually did the show was the way, because I told her, you about it, like I said, you know, you. I remember in the dream I was telling you, like, specifically how you should put up self-portraits of famous artists, but then tell people to, you know, create their own self-portrait. So,
wow.
You know, not many good ideas come to me in a dream, but,
no,
you know.
So it was destined to be. That's an incredible backstory. This show was destined to be. We're all in the right place at the right time.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Well, glad you could make it here this evening. And, you know, if you didn't really catch hearing Peter's, his was kind of a trip. I don't know if you got a chance to read it or if you got a chance to hear it, if you'd like to make a comment.
Well, I, you know, the thing is I always appreciate and enjoy Peter's writing because it makes me think. I got to read over it. You know, I do know from his, really the comment that I could probably make is that from his previous poetry, it seems like, and I think he even says that he's an artist or an art teacher, like art is part of his background. So I can see why he would definitely use a lot of references. You know, to me, I feel like, to me, this just feels like the whole progress of going through awkward stages in life and then coming out more comfortable with yourself. I did find that very end stanza funny where it says, always a one for the girls, lad with bicycle and bell, oblivion's future install with a question. To me, that feels like somebody who, you know, like they knew they were into the ladies, they wanted the ladies, but darn it, the ladies just weren't quite as much into them. Of course, I could be wrong and be insulting Peter, in which case I apologize, but, you know, he does just have really, like Ephesiana said, the kind of poetry that you have to look at over and over again.
Yeah, great comment. And like Ephesiana says, I do believe that also, too, as far as that he has the art background. You know, somehow Peter also figures out or, like, you know, it's he has, like, such a weird combination. It's, like, the most sophisticated writing, but he finds a way to, you know, almost write as if it's like, you know, a degenerate or something, or like, you know what I mean? Like he has this really kind of a savage way of writing it, but it's such a sophisticated thing that as far as using the reference, he almost intertwines two polar opposite ends of the spectrum and somehow in his right. So it's just a fantastic piece. So, anyway, with
that's
that being said here, Pam. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Paisley.
I was going to say, it's gritty and fancy at the same time. You're right. He has a good mix there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, why don't we go to the next one? Who's up on deck
okay.
here?
Daniel Deschino. So I'm going to read this one for him. The Silhouette of a Shadow in the Dark by Daniel Deschino. How to think about oneself and judge with free and open mind. How does a painting on a museum wall understand the thoughts of the visitors who stare? A mirror may reflect the surface tension that quakes for those around me. But if I look really deep, The glass of the mirror becomes the melted sand it once was, just crushed and weathered rocks, one of the countless numbers thrown across the earth. If I stare in the lakes of life that nature provides, then, and only then, do I see the purity of the natural world and myself floating in it. But even the gentlest zephyr, one not strong enough to move a decaying leaf, easily warps the vision I see within the lake. And within the cement, steel, and deadwood fortress of human marvel that I live, walk, and feel safe. Sometimes nature will nourish with tears from the sky and leave reflections to ponder on the cold, hard surface of man. But when I look, I only see the dirt and filth the reflection covers, and in shame, I look away. And what do I see but other humans scurrying about? So I follow and wander among the crowds as they grow until horizons are lost in the gathering masses. And as the day processes unstopped through time, that's when I see it, shadows, silhouettes, representations, growing with each passing moment, indistinguishable from each other. And I raise my hand to find myself, like a question being asked to all that is around me. There I am, the shadow with the moving hand, and the sun sets as all shadows stretch to nothing. End poem.
Great read of Faziana, and great write, Daniel. Pam, could we start with you on comments?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I always enjoy and appreciate Daniel's writing. And the first thing I thought of is with the title is back when my mom and her sisters were kids, it was really popular to get the artwork done where you had the silhouette of the child. And my mom used to have all four of their pictures in that form. And so I thought of that, and then I thought of the idea that someone is searching for them, their whole selves, because all they've had at this point is the shadow of themselves. I really like how throughout this whole poem, Daniel writes about what we've seen in others of his poetry, is that he has a great love for nature, a connection with nature, and that he's constantly trying to find his sense of self, his sense of spirituality within nature. I thought that it was really hard-hitting to bring up, and within the cement, steel, and deadwood force of human marvel that I live, walk, and feel safe, sometimes nature will nourish with tears from the sky. And what I particularly liked about that stanza was that, to me, it touched on the idea that it's not always best for us to feel safe. Sometimes we grow more as people when we step out of our comfort zone. So just a brilliant write all the way through, and a wonderful portrait of Daniel.
Great comment, Pam. Yeah, I think that this piece is a very powerful piece. And, you know, and when he says here, talking about being out in nature and seeing himself in the lake or seeing himself in the water, you know, we really truly get a feel for, our place, we're just a part of this, it's not about us. And when contrasted, when you go back to being on cement, and you see, look down and you see your shadow, that's all that there is there, is your silhouette. But I think out in nature, you see yourself so much clearer and so much deeper, but you're only a part of the landscape in the portrait on the water. But on the cement, you're the only thing, but it's just a flat silhouette that's black on the cement. You don't see your face. You don't see any deeper than that. So I thought that this was a very powerful write, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. Faziana, what did you think?
I liked it. I love the way he talked about mirrors. The glass of the mirror becomes the melted sand it once was, just crushed and weathered rocks. You don't often think about the source of a mirror. And that description there really makes you think about, like, what things are made of, which makes you wonder what you're made of, in both a physical and metaphorical sense. Looking at the mirror, wondering what it is and how it can go back into its roots. When I read "And Within the Cement, Steel, and Deadwood Fortress," I originally thought it said forest, which felt relevant too, because the city is kind of the urban jungle, right? The cement and the steel and the dead wood of things that humans build with. I saw that as kind of a almost corrupted forest, but he says fortress. So it's those things are protecting us, and yet you can see that he has a love for the nature. And I really liked how he says, "I only see the dirt and filth the reflection covers, and in shame I look away." And to me, that kind of said that he's feeling bad about being pessimistic. He's only seeing the negative. And he's also maybe only seeing his own flaws when he looks in the mirror, and he can't deal with that. So he's looking away from himself. He's looking away from this negativity as well that he's finding in himself, where he's only seeing the dirt and filth rather than what is potentially the beautiful reflection. I think that it's deep and it's intricate, and he has such interesting images. I just can't get past the part with the mirror being the melted sand and crushed weathered rocks. It's just a fascinating way of putting it. Very well done, Daniel.
Great comment, Afasiana. Why don't you take us to the next one on that?
Okay, our next one has an audio. And let's see.
Perfect.
Just loading it up. Come on. Internet likes to crash at exactly the moment where I need it. It's like, all
nice.
While I'm talking.
You got to talk nice to it. You got to talk nice to it, Afasia. Cheer it along.
Please, computer. You can do it. It's loading very slowly. Has that little picture of the dinosaur that's like, you are in ancient times of no connection.
Really?
Yeah.
That's something. That must be a Canadian thing. I don't know any picture of dinosaur that pops up.
I don't know. I use Google Chrome, and whenever the internet cuts out, there's a little picture of a dinosaur.
really? We must
like
have
really
Windows 98. Oh, no, okay, go ahead.
Okay, so here is the audio, and this is by EA.
Hi, this is Ia, here to read my poem, The Journeyman's Jacket, written for the self-portrait contest. And here is my self-portrait. And this poem was inspired by the journeyman that I used to see on the side of the road in Germany. And I was always fascinated by them because of their costumes. They had black bell bottoms and black top hats and these elaborately carved sticks on which they hung their only possessions, a bundle wrapped up in a handkerchief. And they would have on these wonderful black vests and jackets, which were covered with shiny buttons. And I just found out that the 8 buttons on the vests represented the 8 hours in the workday, and the 6 buttons on the jacket represented the 6 days of the week in which they were expected to complete their work. And they would go from house to house and farm to farm and church to church looking for what work there was to be done, and that was how they became masters of their trades. And it's an important tradition that was, during the Renaissance, a very, very vital for the transmission of artistic ideas and workmanship. So here goes. The Journeyman's Jacket. The journeymen I used to see along black forest roads, who never stuck their thumbs out for a ride, their only loads, a bundle fastened to a club, all carved in swirling pattern, that served another purpose, as a cane on which to lean, have come to be a metaphor in which myself was shown to me as one who walks without a destination known, but working like the button sewn upon dark-breasted vests, 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, that jacket's shine attests. To journeys taken in the spirit, we all will get there when we wear it.
Great piece, Ia, and thank you for the background story describing it and what the motivation was behind it. Faziana, could I get you to start on comments?
Well, I'm glad she gave us that intro because I wasn't familiar with the buttons, and I think having that context really helped with the poem. I mean, it's a wonderful poem, whether you have it or not, but having that background just adds a nice history to it. I really like the image that I get in my mind of the bundle fastened to the club and how it also works as a cane to lean on, and just the idea of using that in multiple ways and that it's all carved in a swirling pattern is really neat to me. I have a friend who carves walking sticks, and they're absolutely beautiful, and he has kind of like a swirl thing that he does. They're really expensive. He spends like forever, like 100 hours at least on each walking stick, and it's kind of how I picture it. So I love the image that it comes with, and that she straight out says that it's become a metaphor and it represents herself and that idea of not having a destination, just going and not sticking your thumb out for a ride, just enjoying the journey. I think that's really fascinating. Not something I pictured in a self-portrait of her, but I think it's wonderful. Great poem.
Great comment, Faziana. I thought that this was very fascinating, right? But very profound, right? And I could be wrong with the meaning, you know, kind of behind it, but I kind of take the button kind of as a symbolic thing, as representative of you making the commitment, and you don't know really where the commitment is going to take you. You just kind of have faith in the work, right? This work, and you put in the work, it's going to take you to your destination. And when I wear it on my coat and I wear it as a jacket, it's my commitment to not only by telling the world and by telling everybody, right, you can't fold, right? You can't turn back on this. You can't be having this button or whatever and be at the beach and be all, you know, sit there dilly-dallying, doing this, doing that. You know, it's your commitment to telling the world that you're committed to your work. And, you know, and I think that, you know, you don't necessarily know where that's going to take you. You just know that it's going to be where you're meant to be when you put in the work. So I thought that this was a very good write and very well done. Pam, what did you think about this?
Yeah, I thought this was wonderful. I always enjoy Ia's writing, and especially because she does brevities so well. And I like this one because it does allow us to know a little bit more about her and how she sees herself. I really like that she saw herself in the symbolism of the journeyman and the buttons and the walking stick. And the idea, to me, it really spoke really well of a journey of independence and a free spirit. And, you know, I like how She reminds us at the end that that jackets shine a test to journeys taken in the spirit. We will all get there when we wear it. And to me, that really just speaks beautifully and profoundly on the whole idea that we should be focused more on that which makes us spiritually beautiful and wealthy rather than, you know, physically wealthy. You know, like if to journey from one place to another and be a free spirit is what helps you to grow, you know, as a person, then, you know, definitely do that. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Faziata, back to you on where we're heading to next.
Pam, would you read us the poem by Incubus 2?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. All right. This is Carve Up by Incubus 2, and it goes like this. Take the bark from any given tree, weathered by the storms of longevity and cracked by far too many lovers, carving their names deep within without true feeling over one another. Stick it on a pedestal, balanced so precariously, where strangers can so easily knock it down and stomp over free. Woodworm riddled, amber filled, superficial self-repair. I am no David, no the thinker. Waste not the time to stop and stare. I am but firewood, ash, and clinker, and poem.
And poem, yeah, that's a great write, Pam, and great read, or great write, Incubus, and great read, Pam. This is a very interesting write. The tree is used for many metaphors. I think that this one, you know, is kind of an interesting and not quite as used one, if you're going to use it as that, but it's kind of being one in the forest. It's kind of, or, you know, one tree in the forest, or else you could be one face in the crowd and kind of accepting that role. And kind of not only accepting it, but I guess making it in the beautiful side to that. You know, when you create it into poetry. But I think that there's a very interesting dynamic here of being of seeing the importance. You know, the firewood. You know, it's the entire thing. It's the entire cycle of it all, right? You're a blooming tree, but you also accept the fact that you're firewood and guiding, you know, giving light or you know, for the next generation. So I think it's the full cycle of a human. So anyway, great write. Pam, what did you think about this?
I think this is really just heartfelt and clever. To me, I really like the idea that he's used the tree as a metaphor for the idea of someone who's been, you know, scarred and hurt over and over again. You know, I really liked the wormwood riddled, amber filled. You know, I thought that was just a great metaphor for the pain and bleeding within. I am no David, no the thinker, waste not the time to stop and stare. To me, it just really speaks on how, you know, if you're looking for, you know, just, you know, the works of art, you're not going to find it in me. Or if you're looking for the works of art that, you know, don't have any flaws, you're not going to find that in me. I thought it was really great, too, that he ended with the word clinker, which is a necessary ingredient in the making of cement. And so I think by ending in that with that word, there's, to me, the idea of I am a stronger person than you realize, a stronger person than I realize. I also get the feeling, because I know he's mentioned before that he's from Yorkshire, and I don't know a lot about that area, but for some reason I'm thinking they might do coal mining and stuff there. And since clinker comes from coal, I feel like there's a reference there. And I could be wrong. Don't quote me on it. I probably should have looked first before saying something. But I feel like there's a reference there to his, where he comes from. You know, just a really intriguing light on offering oneself up, on being an imperfect person and, you know, accepting yourself for who you are. So beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. I really liked that. I thought that was pretty insightful. So, Paziana, what did you think?
I really liked the part about the lovers carving their names, and they carve them deep without true feelings over one another. I can see that happening with people doing it in trees, but also the idea of him being the tree, that so many people who maybe gave the impression that they had deep feelings and then didn't really broke his heart, and he has the scars from all of those failed relationships where they've written their name on him and left their impression, but then left. I thought that was a really great metaphor. I kind of got stuck there. I think I missed a lot of it after that because I was just thinking about that part, which I really enjoyed. And let's see. Dex, would you please read the poem by Crystal Raoul?
Certainly. All right. This is Crystal Raoul, Picture Perfect. Would you please picture a picture, perfect me? Please see a me without any of my insecurities, perfectly posed under professional lights, a famous grin on my skin, oh so tight. Be blind. Do not look at me like this. I know they say love yourself, not your hips. But I am truly wrong for my longing at the mall. When I see the girls that pass so pretty and so tall, I know I'm not alone. So those same girls long for better skin, better hair, better bones. I don't know their story, but I know the society. It surely isn't picture perfect, that much I can see. And poem. And Faziana, why don't we start with you on comment?
I like that she recognized that even the girls who she was admiring probably shared those insecurities. That the ones who she considers to be absolutely beautiful wish that their skin and their hair and everything was different. I mean, it's a very sad commentary on society, but I think it says a lot about Crystal that she sees that, and maybe it makes her realize about herself that she is probably more beautiful to others than she realizes, because she has all those insecurities. But it would be really nice if she recognized that, just like those girls who she's seeing, she's pretty despite her insecurities. I think this shows her character quite well, and it's a commentary on society as well as herself, but I think that it's a painful kind of beautiful.
Great comment. Yeah, I thought that this was a very, very great piece about, you know, the judgment that we have, or that, especially in, for women, as far as in this society on the way that beauty has been pushed, is for a very, very long time, and the things that have been done for beauty. But I also think that it's very interesting that it's, you know, when it starts talking about under the lights, picture me perfect. You know, a picture is only two-dimensional, and you can control such a dynamic to it that you can just spotlight it, and you can make some pose, and you can do this, and you can artificially do that, and you can make it so perfect. It's a lot different from seeing the person in the centerfold than to seeing them going in and out of stores at the mall, right? And so then you maybe see their flaws a little bit more, or you see them as a person, you can recognize those flaws. But I thought that this was a very telling write, and had a couple, I think that you can view this in a couple of different ways, so very well done. Pam, what did you think?
Well, first of all, wonderful comments, both of you. Yeah, I really like this. I have to agree with this, Faviana. It is sad and beautiful at the same time. And like you said, you know, it's so easy now to just use those filters to make ourselves look perfect or as close to perfect as possible. And what I like about this is, and she opens up with, you know, would you please picture a picture perfect me? Please see a me without any of my insecurities. She doesn't say, you know, please see a me without any of my physical flaws. She says insecurity. So right away, there's that acknowledgement that of the having to struggle with the insecurities. You know, they're just, I like how she, as it was mentioned that, you know, she knows that everybody faces doubts about themselves as she does. And she knows that part of it is because of the society that we live in, the society you know, magazines for women, and, you know, even social media, because in social media, it's not just the filters where we're putting up the best pictures of ourselves. We only post the pictures, or at least some of us do, of the best meals we cooked, the best behavior of our kids, you know. And so, yeah, there's this whole idea of this pressure to be picture perfect. And I thought this was a strong emotive write and very well done.
Yeah, you don't see too many people posting hot Oscar Mayer wieners on white bread night, do they?
Exactly.
The night where you come home and you just do a quick meal like that, or ramen noodle night or nothing like that. So it's always the steak birthday dinner, isn't it? So anyway, great comment, Pam. Faziana, where are we heading to next?
I'm going to read one by Mamya. Ballerina in a black lacquer music box. Sallow skin, glassy eyes, nostrils wide, lips all parched, hunched over, a paperback, nose between pages, dizzy from the smell of paper. Greasy hair covering her pockmarked face. No beauty is she. No, she never claimed to be. Still she dances. Emo music, banging her head and swinging her hips. 41 turning 20, her mind all in a frenzy. One moment high, the next she wants to die. Round and round she goes, twirling like a little ballerina in a black lacquer music box, waiting for the clockwork to stop. End poem.
Great read of Faziana, and great write, Mamyal. I thought that this was a very powerful piece, and I thought that this was a very well, very, just a great metaphor used. She starts off her description of herself, you know, glassy-eyed, nostrils wide, hunched over, a paperback, nose between pages, obviously into the books. But, you know, it's kind of the clash of things, right? And I think that that's what represents her that she's talking about. There's the high and then there's the low. You know, you're talking about being the ballerina in the music box, but you're talking about being an emo person that's banging your head. And all of the 41 going on 20, it's the opposites colliding in from one minute to the next. It's different, and it's what you wouldn't think. You know, for all of us, at some point the clock is going to stop, and we're all going round and round until it happens. So I thought that this was a fantastic metaphor, and very well put together as far as just the clash, I feel like, of concepts. Let's go, Pam. What did you think about this?
I thought this was wonderful. It was powerful and heartfelt. I like how she writes about herself, but she does it in a second-person observation, as if she's standing outside of herself and looking at herself. I like that she shows us that she's a person, that reading is important to her, that she dances to her emo music. There's a really raw honesty to this one that I truly appreciate and moves me. And 41 turning 20, her mind all in a frenzy, on high, the next she wants to die. You know, the fact that she, like, to me touches on, you know, what it's like to live with mental illness and to struggle with it on a daily basis, depression, bipolar, whatever it is that you struggle with, anybody struggles with. It can sometimes feel like you're going in circles. I also felt like 41 turning 20 goes on the idea, could be a positive thing too, because, you know, maybe we're here talking here about someone who has a kind of youthful exuberance and energy at times, which I could definitely see in Mamuel. Like, if you had, like, I would have never guessed Mamuel's age is 41. Because she does have this certain kind of enthusiasm, and I don't know if enthusiasm is the right word, but you know what I mean. Like there's something about her energy that is youthful, yes. And so just a wonderful write and very well done.
I would have never guessed her at 41 either. I thought that she was younger than that also. So I think that fit her spot on. And, you know, I think that energy a lot of times comes with, and I'm not by any means saying anybody's mental illness, but a lot of people that do have mental illness, especially like a bipolar and things, I mean, there's like a, you know, I think that there's that hyper focus where you have all the energy in the world and you can do this and you can do that, and then there's that huge crash. And so it's this up and down thing. So anyway, great comment, Pam. Paziana, what did you think?
Well, I agree with what both of you have been saying. I really liked the way she eased in from a physical description into her hobbies, such as the reading and the music. But I mean, like, she's my kind of girl. The books and the emo music, like, why are we not closer friends, Mamuel? I really liked her enthusiasm here, and 41 turning 20. I took it the same way as Pam, of she is 41, but she has that youthful spirit. Maybe she sees herself as a little bit immature, but I think it's a positive thing that she's held on to that youth. Mind all in a frenzy, having the highs and the lows. Like, seriously, Mamuel, we are kindred spirits. and then there's that thing of, like, being the ballerina who's dancing for everyone else, but when the music box closes and nobody can see, she stops and has that darkness. So it's a mix of things. I thought this was absolutely beautiful.
Great comment, Ephesiana. And bring us to our next one.
Okay, we have one by Stephen T. Wellman. Pam, are you available to read that one?
Absolutely. This is Self-Portrait by Stephen T. Wellman, and it goes like this. Insignificant instrument I am. Heart beats like a drum. The beat is loud, never heard in the distance. Ears that hear what they want. Pool of humanity is shallow, lost its touch with reality. Desert wasteland. Tearless eyes dry the oceans. No more emotions. Just enthralling enigmas. Superficial smiles hide behind masks. The rock in my chest cannot rest. The rock in my chest must be thrown. Ripples in my heart need to make a difference. Maybe enough salty tears left. Maybe enough steam to erase creases. The fallout of life's folly. My glass orbs brown and muddied from footprints left behind. Faded and jaded from frosty friendships, eyes that know the darkness in my soul, turn away and never listen. A bare crown shines on top, silver blends with dark browns. Wisdom wipes away the innocence. Outside appearance changes. Dry riverbeds transforms the skin's surface. A clay jar becomes cracked and dry. Living life rearranges the illusion. Suffering for my sanity. The soul remains caged in chain. My words reveal what an immortal soul cannot kill. Pain is actually my friend. The telltale heart bleeds the beautiful, painting my palette blue and gray. As I look out on a cold winter's day, my portrait hung in an empty hall, a frameless head on an empty wall. Sad, sunken eyes never forget, watching the world waste away. A passerby looks and moves on. End poem.
Great write and great read there, Pam. Faziana, why don't we start with you on comments?
I thought this was brilliant. It delves into the emotional side and a little bit on the physical side. The way that it describes the humanity as a desert wasteland, tearless eyes dry the oceans. Like that is intense, to dry out the oceans with your inability to cry. The rock in my chest cannot rest. The rock in my chest must be thrown. This uses natural imagery to really just show so much pain. The dried out eyes, the weighed down chest. It's wonderful the way that it creates that those feelings. Where is it? That the friendships that didn't work out are considered frosty also has a little bit of nature imagery there. It's like the winter has come and taken away, and then later on it gets more into the wintry kind of feel of that sadness. I liked wisdom wipes away the innocence, and how your body is affected by your insides having a hard time. You know, the skin surface becomes cracked and dry. You are more likely to have, like, frown lines, and people seem to age faster when they're emotionally struggling. There's something about it where it just seems like your body gives out in as your soul struggles. So I think this is wonderful. I liked the telltale heart reference to Poe, and the colors used, the blue and the gray, because that is a palette of sadness generally. the part that really struck me was the frameless head on an empty wall, the idea of just being a face that's there and not a complete person is what it feels like. Wonderful poem.
Yeah, great comment, Faziana. There's a lot of pain in this one. And obviously he touches on that, but he kind of how he views himself in life. But it's also kind of, you know, viewing the lack of emotion in the world. It's almost as if there's a part of him that is his thought about revenge on people and things like this. You know, when you've been wronged, right? But you look into the mirror, you look at yourself, and you just can't do that. And it's almost like people like Stephen are the world's balance. You know, you can't cry because you have no emotions. Well, he's done enough crying for both of you. You know, you can't feel for this person. Well, I doubly feel for everybody, and I just think that this is somebody that it's a heartbreaking thing, but he's turned it into beauty in recognizing how special it is to really feel. So I thought that this was a very very deep, powerful write, and very well done. Pam, what did you think?
Oh yeah, this is definitely a powerful and heartfelt. And you know, when I saw this contest that you were running, Faziana, one of my first thoughts was I hope Stephen T. Wellman writes for it. And I knew he most likely would, because he usually does write for your guys' show. But I felt like this would be a great prompt for him. Now that. Where it says a frameless head on an empty wall, I don't know if it's just because of the area I'm from, but I automatically think of, you know, when somebody gets that 12-point buck and mounts the head up on the wall. There was something about that that kind of spoke to the idea of being seen as a trophy, but not really truly appreciated for who you are. I like how he combines a combination of the physical looks, but more focuses on the emotional, the psychological. And to me, this spoke, there was this undertone to me of speaking about how there's this pressure in society to not reveal your emotions, especially if you're a man. You know, at certain families, certain cultures and societies, parts of society, there is that, you know, like, you know, just, you know, even at little boys, you know, you suck it up, don't cry, you know, and to me, I also, there was this sense of learning to heal, especially when he says, the rock in my chest cannot rest, the rock in my chest must be thrown, ripples in my heart, you know, that to me, that speaks on the idea of breaking that generational curse, moving forward, and you know, it really, those lines to me have a real sense of empowerment. To me, this speaks strongly on the idea of how our experiences and the people we interact with really shape who we become. But in the end, we're the ones who have the final say of who we become. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And next up, we have a write by Gerald E. Green, and it looks like we have an audio for that one. So why don't we give that a play?
Morning Ritual, written and read by Gerald Green. A highlight of the octogenarian's day begins each morning when unsteady legs transport a waking mind and two full bladder from a cozy mattress to the nearest bowl of porcelain. It matters not how many trips one took throughout the night, or if 10 hours of unmolested rest flew by. Relief must meet this urgent, swelling threat. To fully value and appreciate this daily ritual, one must be seated and relaxed, where burdens can't encroach upon the scene, behind closed doors that muffle outside sounds. When sphincters loosen, time stands still, as nerves report a primal movement, bringing heightened satisfaction to the fore, a sense of great anticipation one cannot prevent. Assurance of relief without a complication or delay delivers smiles each day that no one sees, before a drop is heard or ripple made by toxic liquid in the waiting reservoir. And then the mighty steady stream arrives without announcement or fanfare, responding to anticipation's call, delivering a state of mind with no anxiety. Endorphins sweep remaining grogginess and clear the consciousness for those few seconds when the pressure's peak creates a teenage dream to be embraced and celebrated with a sigh. Stage two arrives when urge no longer rings its ancient and familiar bell, and yet a need remains to be fulfilled as satisfaction gains more ground with every pulse. It's in these moments when the aged mind appreciates and ruminates the simple and the plain, assured that life is good while body's voice declines and fluid's arc reduces with each breath. The final spurts cut short the joyous ride, replacing stress with sense of readiness to face whatever lies beyond this needful place, as thankfulness for life renews, rejuvenates. When dribbles end, the mind refreshed is eager to move on in such a rush that niceties and manners are ignored as if the now, just finished act had not occurred and bladders don't exist. The elderly move on with settled confidence. Tomorrow will begin the same, although the end is closer by another day. End poem.
Wow, I actually really loved that, and it amazes me how classy and, like, articulate and dignified he made a poem about peeing. Like, I would never have thought of, like, urination as being such an eloquent piece, but he did it. Gerald is amazing like that. He can make anything seem fancy. I liked the word octogenarian. I don't think I've ever used that word, but what better way to say someone in their 80s? Like, it's incredible how he uses his vocabulary to just elevate every line. A waking mind and two full bladder, from a cozy pillow to the nearest bowl of porcelain. Even bowl of porcelain, I now want to call toilets bowls of porcelain. That's just such a well-said piece. Where is it? He makes peeing seem like such an experience. Endorphins sweep remaining grogginess and clear consciousness for those few seconds. This is just like incredible. I don't even know. I'm speechless at how much I liked a poem about going to the bathroom. I would not have expected that, but I truly enjoy this poem. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I have to agree with you. It is just absolutely clever the way he used this classy language to write a poem on going to the bathroom in the morning. And, you know, to me, it just, you know, first of all, it's relatable. I mean, I'm not in my 80s, but I still, that first pee in the morning, yeah, complete relief. But to me, I really liked how this worked well as an extended metaphor. Like, it's clever and it's, you know, fun to read and, you know, but there's also that idea that, you know, it's about appreciating the small victories in life that not everybody sees and not everybody cheers you on for it, thank goodness, because if people were cheering me on in my bathroom, I probably could not go. And but you know, I like also how there's this kind of idea of this acceptance of the aging process and how the body changes. I really like it in these moments when the aged mind appreciates and ruminates the simple and the plain, assured the life is good while body's voice declines and food's arc reduced with each breath. You know, there's just those moments in life where you just appreciate the things that are still working of the body, because there's so much that starts to not work. Just really a wonderful, clever write with, like I said, a great extended metaphor and very well done.
That was a great comment, Pam. Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought that this was great. And it personally, you know, I think that some of the best self-portraits are the ones that kind of you don't really maybe like are just kind of like so different that they stand out, you know. Like the thing I thought of Caravaggio's, where he's the David and Goliath, and he's the monster, and it cut his head off. And then you got your guy that you have on here, and he's doing the finger to his lips, and he's kind of making a goofy face. What an amazing self-portrait it would be to be like, you know, from showing a picture from the neck up, and it looks like sophisticated, but it's the backstory on it, and it's actually a picture of you while you're taking a piss or something. You know, I mean, it's like, to do a self-portrait of you taking a leak is, it stands out, you know, because so many people, like I said, there's so many people that have done self-portraits before. You know, what makes yours different? And the simplicity and the brilliance to capture that moment as yours, I thought is very, very artistic, so very well done. All right.
I agree. What poem are we going to read next?
We're going to this one by Our List. And I don't remember who was on deck. So
I think you.
I'll take it. All right, this is Titus Canyon by Our List. The message, inscrutable. Still the stones speak, calling us to the back of beyond. Before we were drilling us underground to confront our roots, drawing us deeper into the mystery of I and thou. They speak of seasons past, planting and harvest. They speak of life to come. Seeding and birth, souls chained to the earth, yet free enough to fly. All the ancient myths inform our days. The spider woman climbs existence's web, caught in the exigencies of rebuke, and wants the delicate or dialectic of desire, the turning of the screw. Her golden bowl cracks, yet a tourist buys. I've gathered the grains of my forefathers I have written, their stories of on my heart, stories of the start of the world, stories of heroism and love, of magic and love. I hear them calling me to the back of beyond, willing me to fulfill the promise of singing stones. End poem.
Sorry, I was on mute. Great read, Dexter. And wonderful poem, Our List. I thought this was really interesting. Drilling us underground to confront our roots. I think that's really interesting, the idea of of needing to deal with your family history and your own history. So looking at those roots, I think the roots are a really good metaphor there. And seeding and birth, thinking about your beginnings, and about, you know, also later on spreading your seeds, having the next generation. Where is it now? Her golden bowl cracks, yet a tourist buys. The imperfections that you think are a big deal, maybe something that someone else sees as character, as something that makes it unique and special. I like that the forefathers have written their stories on his heart, but it's not even that they have written it. He has written their stories on his heart. He has looked it up. He has taken to heart what his family has experienced and taught him, and he's put that into his own personality. He's taken on that by writing it into himself. And the singing stones. I think this is just beautiful. Really a wonderful way of looking at family and the impacts and keeping the parts of it that suit you and that help you grow. Pam, what did you think?
I think this is absolutely brilliant. I really like how it speaks on connection to history and to family and you know, to the land, you know, and based on the Titus Canyon of the title, the reference to the Spider Woman, I feel like there's references here to the Navajo tribe. And I don't know if he has Navajo in his family background, or perhaps it's just a connection he feels with them and their traditions and their connection to the land. But there's really a sense of respect here for, as he says, the message inscrutable still the stone speaks, calling us the back of beyond before we were. You know, the stone, I mean, is one of the most ancient things around, and there is, I don't know, I mean, not to sound crazy, but there's just a certain energy that everything in life gives off, including stones, you know, and it's just a matter of us taking time to stop and listen. And the nod towards the golden bowl cracks, you know, I liked Ephesiana's observations on that. And I like the end where he says, stories of heroism and love, of magic and love, I hear them calling to me. You know, there's just such a sense, as I said, a sense of connection to either his own personal history or history in general. I found this to be a powerful write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Dexter, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I liked this quite a bit, and you know, from his previous writes, he's talked about his father, and he's talked about, you know, his family lineage, and I thought the canyon was so well written. You know, part of it, you know, her bowl cracks, yet the tourist buys. You know, so many people are so into history and into, you know, old antiques and all of these things that they buy, even cracked ones, because, you know, it kind of like cracked like a canyon. I took that kind of as a metaphor too. But it's somebody else's story. It's somebody else's lineage. It's somebody else's background. And so he enjoys bringing his lineage to light as the artwork for everybody to see. And he, instead of being maybe the tourist that buys while they're there, He's going to be the one that's I think that in his past he talked about maybe other people in his lineage being not maybe artistic, more hardworking and all of these things, and he views it. And his duty to his lineage of not maybe being this, in his words, act stories of heroism and love and all of these things, his contribution to the family is being the writer that is telling their story for years to come. So I thought that this was a very great piece and a very powerful write and very well done. So I'll bring up the next one here.
I love your interpretation of that. That was a really great comment, Dex.
Thank you. All right, the next one we got here is by Diane D, and I'm going to have you read that when it comes up. Selfie.
When you say you mean me?
Exactly. You, me.
I don't know. You could be anyone. All right, Selfie by Diane D. I took a selfie once on a Tuesday. It had more face and fewer feelings. Who's behind the pasted coldness? Mona Lisa with the gold full of smile. Put her inside water bubbles aback, a slightly see-through stained glass, or the black and white of her youth. But you'll never remove her red eye. Couldn't recreate adequate enough to hide the crack in the stained glass. And those bubbles started popping ago when she gave up blowing them. Decided to put her away in a frame, but not to put her on display. Just to stash her away in a whenever box. She's used to being in a labeled box. Dragged that corrugated carton with a whenever label on it for decades. Moved in the rain so many times that its corners curled under its faded tan. Peeled that label Valentine's Day 2020, found her inside a Tina Turner journal, relieved her of the 36-year layer of dust, displaying her on the fireplace, no frame. I pulled out the Tina journal and found a blank page. I sat to write her portrait. In those eyes, I don't just see, I know. So I drew the corners of her mouth up. Into a smile, I shaded her uniqueness. It's like a sky no painter's ever captured. The ink trickled, and into the midnight, I drafted her constant self in stanzas. Molded her into marble with charcoal, marks swirling her words around like a swan preening its milk-white pinions. You'll not be put in a box again, Diane. End poem. Wow, I loved this, Diane. I really did. The idea of like kind of putting yourself away, and maybe it's metaphorical for like kind of like hiding that true self, but still carrying it around everywhere with you. I liked the idea of her having this picture of herself that she wanted to keep, but she didn't want to display it. You know, she wanted to remember that day. She wanted to remember how she felt and who she was, but she wasn't sure if that was for the world to see, and she kept it in that box, and she carried it everywhere. I really like the way she talks about how it changes. Its corners curled under its faded tan. The way that it actually physically would change, but I think that could also talk about how she might change. The picture ages as she does, and that 36 layer of dust, 36 year layer of dust, gives us a sense of the time since she took that selfie, and then she's looking at herself. And thinking about it, in those eyes, I don't just see, I know. And she remembers who she was looking at those eyes. And then she changes her the mouth of the picture into a smile, and tries to show what wasn't able to be captured in the picture. And then she has that empowerment at the end of, you'll not be put in a box again, and she's not going to let anyone tell her who she is. She's going to take out that real her and put it on display. I thought that was a wonderful metaphor. Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, this is a very interesting, it's a very interesting piece. You know, it talks about, you know, having a selfie, and it kind of almost seems like it was the, you know, kind of an old Polaroid or something like that. You know, you'll never remove her red eye. It's a lot more face. And it talks about what's happened kind of since then. And, it's just very, you know, in those eyes, I don't just see, I know, you know. And, you know, we forget sometimes who we were. You know, and sometimes seeing a picture of yourself can bring back that feeling of who we were that we've forgotten about. And so I thought that she did a very good job of capturing that. So very well done.
Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this one really moved me emotionally. I felt like, you know, this is very relatable in the idea of talking to your younger self, like that she acknowledged herself in the end line, I thought was a powerful ending. But all the way through, it's a powerful and emotive write in that idea of looking back on life, looking back at who we used to be, and how we used to feel about ourselves, and, you know, kind of to me this whole, like, this journey of healing all the way through and becoming somebody who learns to love themselves for being the kind of person that steps outside of the box. So just beautifully written and very well done.
I agree. Dex, where are we headed next?
Okay, Pam, if I could get you to read the next one.
Absolutely. All right. Up next we have Self-Portrait in a Funhouse Mirror by W.P. McLeod 1, and it goes like this. The glass ripples and bends in waves of warped reflection, lighting concave and convex facsimiles of the original image. Passerby stopped to laugh at distorted faces and legs stretched and shrunk, thin and fat like putty. Narcissists and the wicked queen catch glimpses of monsters writhing in the tempestuous sea and turn their heads toward the sky. I shift and shape my body like clay in the silver potter's wheel, roller coasting slow and fast, riding demon tricks of light, frozen until the sunlight fades and the mirror dims in darkness. My eyes glaze in the red glare, and my feet stumble back home. In the bathroom, I stare at whiskered cheeks and bloodshot eyes, worn out by what happened on the Coney Island promenade. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Dexter, will you start the comments?
Yeah, this is a very interesting write. I feel like this has a lot to do with either drinking or doing some type of drugs or some type of substance abuse, and I don't know if it's the to try and make, you know, I don't know if it's because if it's the way that society views the person or if the way the person views society in the funhouse mirror, on which lens it's kind of through, but it feels like it's almost through the writer's lens on him looking in the funhouse mirror and then seeing the passersby as they go by behind them almost. You know, and it's like when you shift your shape, my body like clay, I feel like that's you using some type of substance to try and make this life more doable or make everything more adaptable and make it, you know, trying to so that you fit in more. At least in your mind, and you know, and so I thought that this was a very interesting write and very well done.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I mean, Narcissus fell in love with his reflection, and he, you know, wasted away because of that, and didn't actually like fully live because he was so obsessed with his reflection. So. Incorporating Narcissus into this idea of the mirrors and the funhouse mirrors of the different ways you can see yourself. And for me, the thing about those mirrors is it kind of shows you that perspective is everything, because the slight changes in the structure of the mirror can make you seem so different, stretched or shrunk, thin or fat. So many different ways that the same image can be reflected. And I think that that might be a metaphor for how different people will see you in different ways as their view of you is influenced by their own bias. And whatever their perception of you is, isn't necessarily the accurate one. And your view of yourself might not be either. The shaping the body like clay could be about, you know, trying to make your body match the reflection that you want, but it could also be about changing your personality to suit the situation that you're in and whatever reflection is there at that time. Sometimes the reflection is not a mirror. It's what you see in other people as they see you. This is really interesting. I'm kind of lost in thought about it, but I find it fascinating. Pam, what were your thoughts?
I think it's great when a poem gets you lost in thought. I think that's one of the jobs of a good poem. I did like that Dexter brought up the idea of how, you know, drinking or drug use, because I hadn't thought of it that way, but, to me, when somebody sees something different in a poem that makes me think, I always appreciate that. And it does fit, especially to come home with the bloodshot eyes and, you know, even the reference to riding demon tricks of light, I thought was a line that worked really well with that, the idea of drug use. And I liked, Fabiana, that you brought up the idea of how oftentimes the way people see us, especially out in public, is a distorted view of who we truly are. You know, to me this speaks on how so oftentimes we put on a show to fit how we think people want us to be. And then in those moments alone when you look in the mirror and you truly see yourself for who you are, you know, there's just this kind of sense of heaviness because you feel like you carry that burden around. I thought this was an intriguing write all the way through and very well done.
I agree. And Dexter, what are we doing next?
believe I'm up to read, and this one is Axis Mund by Jennifer Denise. Night blindness, hysterical blindness, nihilism, I can't see, arms stretched out in front of me, touch, sound, smell, taste, these things I have, these things have I, a beatnik, I am this, this is me. Traditional values render you emotionally indigent, lackadaisical, you remain, while I dance nude under the moon, eyes sewn shut, those rag dolls sidestep stumbles, X's for eyes, O's forming my lips. Long before I met him, my skip to my Lou darling. From chaos we are born, bang, bang, boom. If my eyes were sewn shut and my teeth were razor sharp and I had the world in my palms of my hand, I'd eat it like an apple, savor each juicy bite of existence. I'd ramble on with bits of a tree stuck between my teeth, Armageddon in my mouth. Seems possible, after all. Words can start and end wars. Don't be afraid of the darkness. Rest assured, you're always welcome here. End poem.
Great read. I love this, Jennifer. It reminds me of Coraline, which is a book by Neil Gaiman, and it's also a film. A cartoon animated one where she gets the button eyes when she's in the alternative universe. The idea of hysterical blindness where you're so upset that you can't see, that is a real thing, and it works really well here. And then to incorporate that into the idea of being the doll with the eyes sewn shut is really good. I like the use of the song, Skip to the Loo, My Darling. The teeth, razor sharp. I really like savor each juicy bite of existence. And then Armageddon in my mouth. That's so cool. Words can start and end wars. Scary but true. And the idea that she is a poet, she is a writer, that is her way of playing with the darkness. And words do have big power. And so that is her way of having Armageddon in her mouth, because her mouth makes those words. And it's like she has the power to take a bite out of the world. Really cool imagery there. Pam, what did you think?
I have to agree that, this is just a wonderful write all the way through. I really like how she touches on the idea of blindness, and then where she goes, traditional values render you emotionally indigent. Lackadaisical, you remain while I dance nude under the moon. Those lines speak very well about the idea of maybe the values that you were raised with, the traditions you were raised with, aren't meant to be your own. You know, maybe you're meant to go out and discover yourself. To me, there's just a real strength in her lines. If I had the world upon my hands, I'd eat it like an apple, savor each juicy bite of existence. Very empowering lines right there in the abilities of a person, a woman, a poet. To digest the world and the nutrients they need from it emotionally. So just a beautiful write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. And Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, this was a great write by Jennifer, and been a little while since I've, you know, heard from her, from her stuff, but maybe I've been off a little bit too, so glad to hear from her again. But yeah, I think that this is a great write, and, you know, I think that it's very profound, because the reality is that, you know, we can sit there and say that deep down we're this, or, you know, we're that. The truth is that our existence is based off of our senses. If you can't see, your existence and your reality of who you are is based off of your other senses. Or if you can see, you know, if you can't hear, and all of these things, your existence within reality is your senses. And I think that that's what this kind of touches on, is that, you know, your self-portrait, you know, is you can't lie to your own senses. And some people maybe distance themselves from it as much as they can, and try to sew shut, and all of these, my teeth are razor sharp and all of this. But I don't know. This is just, yeah, from chaos we are born, bang, bang, boom. You know, your experience is from your lens, and that's in your lens is based around how your body can feel the world. So very well done, and great piece.
And where are we headed to?
Next one, I have one for you.
All right. Self-portrait by Maharsha Lani, 1848. There is a portrait in the attic, which, reversed of gray, is that where one lives young, forever, visage forever static, and without decay. There lies, flung among the dusty contents, rolls of untried plans in disarray. Beyond, upon a tray, the fragile spheres of dreams of far-off lands that broke or never woke to see the day. Outside is the perennial surprise of seeing, with an errant wave, one's hand, or meeting in a window one's own eyes, to realize that though the house may stand, older, painted, and repaired for now, it could be leveled with a single blow. End poem. Pam, would you start the comments, please?
Yeah, I thought this was very well done. It had a strong imagery and metaphors. I really liked rolls of untried plans in disarray, beyond upon a tray, the fragile spheres of dreams of far-off lands. You know, to me, that definitely speaks very well on the idea of how oftentimes we don't get to be who we are fully meant to be, because we put our own dreams aside, and we're always haunted by the what-ifs of life as we grow older. Like, what if I had followed this dream, or what if I had gone on that trip? And those are all the things we don't do shape us, I think, just as much as the things that we do do. So just an excellent write and very well done.
I think that's a great observation, Pam, and that's the part that stuck out to me as well. Those spheres of dreams, far-off lands that broke or never woke to see the day, that they were either destroyed or never even started. I liked that they used the portrait of Dorian Gray, but talked about it as the opposite. Because in Dorian Gray, if I'm not mistaken, the painting ages and he doesn't. Whereas this, the the painting stays young and the person gets older, but that youthfulness lives on in the attic, that old version, that previous version of the person and their dreams and all of those plans and things that connect to that younger version of themselves. I think this is a really thoughtful self-portrait. Dexter, what did you think?
Aha, Pam said doo-doo. No, I'm just kidding. No, but...
I knew that was coming.
You.
I did. As soon as he puts it on my mouth, I was like, Dexter is going to have something to say about that.
No, reverse of gray, you know, I didn't even really think about it, of Dorian Gray. You know, I don't know why in my mind, like, it just was... I was just picturing, like, my grandma, you know, keeping, like, her old, like, photo album in the attic or something, and just looking through them and viewing it, you know, because it's black and white and gray, and these black and white photos, and just seeing, you know, that person that at that time was thinking about doing this or was thinking about doing that. And like Pam said, you know, the what ifs, you know, are sometimes screaming out of our younger selves in photos. So very well done and very, very thought provoking for such a brevity. Okay, next up, we have The Figurehead by Enbrey, and I believe Pam is up for the read. I don't know that. Are you up for the read, Pam?
I am up for the read. Sounds good to me. All right, this is The Figurehead by Enbrey, and it goes like this. How hard I am to see, let me bring thee into light. Enigmat poses, resigned but lifted shoulders, an honest face, rugged like the munch, the north face of the Shilthorn. Hair hoary as a butcher's dog, I paint me down from head to ground in flesh. From every pore I find another sorry tale of life. I'm Jonah in the whale, Ishmael in the gale, with harpoons fixed, a portrait must be true. I'll paint me on the canvas sail with oil and blood and wine and lines dark as rope's brush. Paint me as a gangster without the gun, and in the background, behind my sackcloth back, I'll paint me in a vermilion sun. End poem.
Well read, Pam, and great poem, Enbrey. The part that stuck out to me was, from every pore I find another sorry tale of life. It's like every little bit of yourself has a story. There's so much of your life is held in your body. Like, there's every little thing. Like, you can think of all the scars and the wrinkles and the, like, every little piece of you tells a story. Each thing is connected to something. Even if there is no mark, this hand is one that held this person's hand. This hair was where somebody kind of, like, you know, I don't know, like, there's connection to different memories, to your experiences, and every little bit of you has something of that past. I'll paint me on the canvas sail with oil and blood and wine. I love that. It's not just painting on a canvas. It's painting on a sail, like a ship. They're going to be something that is still in motion. And the choice of, instead of paint, oil and blood and wine, really says something about who he sees as himself. Paint me as a gangster without the gun. So to have that strength, but not be, not necessarily be violent. It's just the attitude. I think that this is really interesting and beautifully put together. Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, I think it's very telling about somebody's personality is this. If show me without the razzle dazzle, you know, bring me to light without the poses. I'm just going to be there with an honest face. You know, there's all of these stories and all of these things. We are a story of life, but I think that it's just very telling of someone. You know, I almost seems like my grandfather or somebody from, you know, it was like, you know, he might have this or that. He's not bragging about himself. He's just taking a normal picture, and he's just, you know, he doesn't need to wear a giant, you know, hat or a purple suit or, you know what I mean, or something like that, or forget all the razz and flash. You know, I am, there is a strength and there's a profoundness of just being straight about it and look at who I really am, not about what I am trying to portray to you. So anyway, great piece.
And Pam, what did you think?
I really like this one all the way through, but I like the line that you said, let me bring me into light, you know, like, you know, let me show you my full and true self. I like, I'm Jonah and the whale, Ishmael and the gale. There's a real sense of somebody who fights, somebody who's learned inner strength. I also, Rugged Like the Munch, I thought that was a reference to Edvard Munch, the artist, you know, which I thought would be really just an intriguing idea, but I'm not 100% sure. You know, it definitely, but this is about somebody who has learned to fight their whole lives, but to find a quiet strength, you know. And so just beautiful imagery and metaphors all the way through and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Dexter, where are we headed?
Okay, I'm reading the next one by Blue Leader One, and this is Sperma Gutenberga by Blue Leader One, and it goes like this. A drop of ink can flink, can kink, can stink. A drop of ink can enter veins, arteries, can enter brains, and flink and kink and stink. A drop of ink smokes red apples and drinks smoky whiskey, drops its pants at parties and passes out. A drop of ink can lounge, can flounce, can hold its flaccid plounce and wink provocatively at passing girls. A drop of ink can die all dry and flaky, but is still remembered. A drop of ink can dance, can laugh, can flatulence. Didn't know that, did you? A drop of ink, so dark, so pure, so still, can speak volumes. End poem.
Great read, Dexter. And this was kind of a fun read, Blue Leader. I like the repetition of A Drop of Ink, and just having the two lines. I think the short stanzas work for this. It had kind of a rhythm to it. It almost made me feel like the clip-clop of like a horse, a drop of ink, and then it just keeps going. Where is it now? Smokes red apples and drinks smoky whiskey. That's surprising because smokes red apples, I guess, okay, I don't know. Maybe that is actually a brand of cigarettes now that I think about it. I was thinking like apples, like the fruit, and I'm like smoking them. But I'm not a smoker, so I don't know brands. So it's probably actually not talking about apples. So I'm going to take that back. I think this is really an interesting piece. I like the structure of it. Pam, what did you think?
Well, I tell you, this is just absolutely intriguing. I really like the repetitiveness of a drop of ink. And I have to say, out of all the contests you guys have had and topics, you know, this one keeps, these writes tonight keep sending me to Google things. And what I've discovered is that Johannes Gutenberg was the guy who introduced print to Europe. And, you know, I feel like that there's this idea of a Blue Leader One saying, I am a poet that, you know, maybe not actually genetically extends from that guy, but, you know, that we all are connected. We are all are related through our love of language, through our drops of ink, through all the ways we express ourselves from those, you know, the smoky whiskey to the dance and the laugh and even the flatulence. You know, I like that he threw the flatulence in there just because of the idea that it's like, hey, you know what? I got all this other stuff going on, but you know what? I'm human, and sometimes my body stinks, you know, just and life stinks. So really just a wonderful write all the way through and very well done.
I'm glad that you reminded us about the title of the Gutenberg. I actually have touched a Gutenberg Bible, which they're fairly rare. So it was one of the main things that the Gutenberg Press reproduced was the Bible, because that was like the one of the only books at the time.
Oh, that's cool.
And yeah, and it was one of the ones that was like they were trying to make religion accessible to the people, not just to the nobility. So the printing press allowed more copies, because before that they had to, like, by hand the monks wrote it out, and there were not that many copies. So the press allowed it to spread more widely. So it was like the thing was that they did this big run of Bibles. And I'm digressing, and we're out of time. The Blog Talk is warning me. But anyway, I touched a Gutenberg Bible, and they're super rare. So I was like, yeah, book nerd. Thank you so much, Pam, for being here with us and for the inspiration for today.
Hold on. You can smoke an apple. You can use an apple. I just wanted to say you can put red apples. You can put weed in it and use it as a pipe. Anyway, keep continuing.
I did not know that. Thank you, Dex. The things you learn. Good to know. Apples. All right. Thank you, Dexter, for being amazing. Thank you, Phil, for letting us have this show. Thank you to everybody who wrote for my contest. And keep an eye on Dexter's account, because he will be doing the contest for our next show. Tomorrow night I have Part Sinner, Part Saint with Babbler. And in half an hour, I believe Pam has a show, so stay tuned.